Welcome back to Arts About.
The show about art that's a work of art in itself.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Sally. And good morning, John.
Yes, wherever he might be. Exactly. John's not in today. He's sick. You're listening to Arts About, which is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. And you're here with me, Sally Bailiw, with Mark Stewart this morning. And yes, John is sick. We wish him the best.
All the best, John.
That's right.
See you soon.
Yeah, you're going to be talking to us today about something, Mark. What might that be?
Well, it's called manipulation.
Ooh. We're all familiar with that, aren't we? Okay, all right. Well, I wonder who you're going to be talking about later on. That's great. Also, we're going to be talking to one of the curators of the high-risk dressing critical fashion exhibition that's on at the RMIT Design Hub. Kate Rhodes is going to explain to us about the Fashion Design Council and its relevance to fashion designers here today. And tomorrow, I think. Also, Anthea McKenzie, previously of SPAC, is going to talk to us about A Woman's Place, which is going to be on at SPAC over the weekend before International Women's Day. I think it's a weekend of events down there. Mm. And I'd like to say on that note how exciting it was to see women everywhere picking up the baton and speaking up for women's equality. And notably, women playing football, which I witnessed this last weekend.
You saw Footscray...
Melbourne. Yes, I did. I went up to the Witten Oval with fellow broadcaster Tracy Hutchison, and we watched those girls. One of them was actually a semi-local, Jess Anderson. She was playing for Melbourne, and it was bloody marvellous.
Really?
Yes, it absolutely was.
How many?
The ground was full, okay. And there was a men's game beforehand that didn't fill the ground. It was maybe three quarters full, and quite a few people left at that point at the end of the men's game. But then the place filled up. The atmosphere was amazing. It was really spectacular. But
mostly women or men as well?
There was a larger proportion of women than you would normally see at a football match, and you saw strollers and children, and it was really incredible. And, you know, it's a terrific little ground. Anyway, it was absolutely fantastic. Well, of course, Melbourne won, and they did a great job. Not of course Melbourne won, but Melbourne did win. And I think it's a very pertinent. I think that I hope the AFL took notice of how well patronised that game was.
Good.
Fantastic. Now, Cliff's joining us a little later as well, and it also seems that Will and Swanee's plea for more airspace after the axing of AA Summertime Light has touched a nerve in our listeners. There's excerpts from some letters received below here. Actually, they're all emails or Facebook comments, but I'd like to read out a couple of them. What has a DC3 in Cambodia got to do with art? Everything. What great storytelling. There's your art, from Kevin Luscombe. Another one, they had a fair go over summer. I'd like to hear about some real happenings in the art world. If you want to hear tall stories, I'll listen to my three-year-old. That's from Priya Prakash. And another one, shame on you, Brendan, the station manager. The brilliant Will and Swanee, ably assisted by Tani, were just getting warmed up. Those guys should have a national radio show. They're the Hamish and Andy of the arty set. I'm sure they're willing to work for a reduced fee. Don't be such a bureaucrat, Brendan, from Greg Hunt. Actually, this last one we did trace back to a bogus Facebook page set up by Swanee. So it does throw into doubt all of the letters that perhaps were sent in. But in the era of alternative facts and fake news, it goes with the flow. We're also going to be playing Island King, episode 11. And so while I get Anthea on the phone to talk about A Woman's Place, here's John Lennon telling it like it is in Woman is the Nigger of the World, the phrase coined by Yoko Ono in a magazine interview in which she was describing women's subservience to men and male chauvinism across all cultures. March the 8th is International Women's Day 2017 and calls on all of us to help forge a more inclusive, gender-equal world. Hashtag be bold for change. And on the weekend before that, A Woman's Place is holding its second coming to celebrate it. A Woman's Place is an original and innovative mini-festival celebrating local women's stories through theatre, music and dance. It's a non-for-profit community initiative with a strong focus on connecting with other community organisations. It was established in 2015 with a focus to connect, strengthen and nurture the creative Spirit of Women Who Live and Work on the Mornington Peninsula. This year, they've expanded their program and will include performances and workshops and a film screening, and as well as their morning tea of stories that they've done before. So to tell us a little bit more about it, one of the driving forces behind this initiative is Anthea McKenzie, and she's on the other end of the line this morning. Good morning, Anthea.
Hi, Sally. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. It's great to talk to you again.
Yes.
Anthea, these days the confines of a woman's place is expanding at an exponential rate. What's your version of it this year?
Well, absolutely. And I guess we do want to start by saying that, of course, our title, A Woman's Place, references that age-old quote that is pretty much redundant for most women these days.
Mm.
But it is interesting throughout this weekend, particularly the storytelling events that you mentioned, the morning tea, it is quite interesting to hear women's stories about where their place is in society, where it has come from, because we often have women who were living in Sorrento in the 1960s come to our morning tea, and women these days, and I guess the preconceived notions of what a woman should be in our society. And I think our young teenage girls in particular are still battling these ideals of what it means to be a woman. So we feel it certainly has its relevance, and really love the fact that we are able to celebrate a weekend of women and their stories, real stories about what life is like on the Mornington Peninsula.
Absolutely, and that morning tea that you're hosting, the one that you did last year, is actually provided the fodder for a performance that Carol Pacciullo and Jane Bailey are doing this year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been an absolutely fantastic process. And when we did begin in 2015 with the morning tea and the stories that were collected and then performed as a verbatim theatre piece, so pretty much word for word, Carol and Jane within a 24-hour period were on stage telling these stories, and it resonated with the audience so much. And afterwards we were saying, this needs to go further. They actually need to be turned into a play now. And so on Sunday, March the 5th at 5 p.m, the premiere of Right Here, which is the play created from the story shared by women in 2015, has been created into a fully produced play, which incorporates four other actors, local actors from the peninsula. So that's really exciting, and that will be a highlight of the weekend.
Yeah, I don't think I made it clear at the very beginning, but of course it is it's a mini festival, and so it runs all over the weekend. And I think on Friday, you start on Saturday, don't you? But there's a moth event on the Friday night at SPAC, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's just been a fantastic opportunity for us to join forces in a sense. The moth event is launching the weekend, and of course they have a very special event lined up, all female artists will be performing, and I believe Rose Batty will also be giving an address at the beginning of the evening. And so the weekend is shaping up to be a really fantastic event for not just women, men also, to come and celebrate life here on the peninsula.
Hello, Anthea. My name's Mark Stewart. I'm sitting here with Sally. Can you tell me, what is the Second Coming about?
Of the festival,
it's written here, he's holding its second coming.
Oh, exactly. Well, they did it last year.
Oh, I see.
Well, 2015, yes.
Right.
We're not claiming to be Jesus or anything.
No, I was thinking in another way, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
No. This is their second.
Absolutely, it has expanded. It is completely built on the first event, and we have called it a festival. We're calling it a bit of a mini festival because we have expanded those range of workshops. And throughout Saturday, there'll be workshops running all day Saturday, the performance on the Sunday, and then, of course, the screening of Embrace, the documentary on International Women's Day. So it really does run over four days, evenings.
Yeah. Yes. Now, the film Embrace is a documentary that I haven't seen yet, but I'm very interested to. It's a documentary that explores the issue of body image in women, isn't it? Made by a woman who I think has gone through, I think she began as a model, didn't she?
I think it was. She was a bodybuilder.
A bodybuilder.
Who used to compete in bodybuilding events, but yes, had was very I guess, drawn into this world of she was defined by her body.
Yes,
the image she put forward, yeah.
And yes, apparently that has gone off like a bomb all around the world, that film. Now, you've also got other workshops there. You've got singing with Ling Mara. Contemporary dance.
And that's just so exciting because we all love Ling Mara here on the peninsula, and that workshop is filling up really quickly. So we do have limited places in the workshop of 20, and they're almost all gone.
If you're interested in that, listeners, you better get onto their website. You've also got something especially for teens this year. You've got Dominique Garrard, who's a local musician. What's she doing?
She's running a workshop on the Saturday afternoon specifically for teenage girls. She's running a songwriting, music improvisation, and then a performance skills workshop for 3 hours. And then she will be staying on in the evening where we're having a teen girls music night. So the girls that took part in the performance can stay on and then actually perform in the music night, as well as if people didn't perform in the workshop, they're still welcome to come along and perform in the evening. And Dom will be singing a few of her own songs in the evening, as well as the plan is a little improvised number with workshop participants.
Fabulous, fabulous. Mm. I know you've got a lot of involvement from other local groups. I know the Peninsula Writers Club and the Dreamhouse Theatre Company and Rotary, the Warehouse Op Shop and Rosebud Secondary College are all involved. It's a hell of a big thing. I've looked at the website. There's so much going on. Who is holding this big group together and driving it?
Well, I would say we know the fabulous Carol Pacciullo.
I thought it might be friend of the show, Carol Pacciullo.
Yeah, so Carol and I are the creative producers of the festival, and we work quite well together in delegating tasks. And I guess I'm more of a behind-the-scenes girl at this point. I'm doing a lot of the producing, and Carol is performing over the weekend and will be collecting the stories. And she's
tireless,
isn't
she?
In many areas.
Anthea, yeah. I have another question. Is there such a thing as an International Men's Day? I'll have to ask a man, will I?
Yes. Now, thank you so much for talking to us today on Arts About Anthea. If people want to find out a little bit more and come along, what's the website?
Well, it's a fairly wordy website, but yep. A Woman's Place 2017.squarespace.com.
I'll put a link on our Facebook page for
that. Yeah, and if people are on Facebook, we are just at A Woman's Place 2017, and then that has all the links to the website and events.
Wonderful. Good luck with it. It sounds fantastic. Thanks for talking to us today. We'll be there.
Thanks,
great.
Anthony.
Bye.
Great. Thank you, Sally and Mark. Bye.
Oh, and now it's time for whatever you were going to be talking to us about.
Now,
yeah, it is. We almost forgot about that, Mark.
I was told, I wonder if there isn't International Man's Day or not, or is that not necessary?
Well, I think that the point of International Women's Day really is this invisible culture that's actually just being spoken about, which is that, you know, the equality of women, and that's deeply under question. And there are a lot of voices that are forming at the moment to say, no, this is not okay. We want to change it. Mm. Do you know, with Tropfest, there was I just read recently that this is a simple example that in the judging of Tropfest, it was realised that 95% of the winning filmmakers were men.
Mm.
And they realised that this year. And in the judging process, they decided to make them blind judges. And the percentage...
Only blind people?
They didn't know the name, so they didn't know the gender of the filmmaker who submitted their films.
Right.
And the proportion of the winning filmmakers jumped from 5% women to 50% women with that. So that's there's a very good example of this culture that exists across everything.
Yeah, this happens in France when Arab people go for jobs through written
letters.
I'll
bet it does, yes.
If they use an Arabic name, they don't even get an interview. Yep. If they use a French name, they're...
Well, they're to in. All of you men out there listening, perhaps you do not realise that the same thing happens to women.
Well, I think it's also the case that the whole idea of patriarchy is that men are actually having to redefine themselves also.
Yeah.
Not only just in relation to women, but in relation to themselves. Yeah. I think there's a big change there. I don't think most of the men really knew what they're doing anyway.
No, they're just following a cultural
pattern,
prototype. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, well, look, Do you remember the Jetsons?
I do, of course, remember the Jetsons.
So it was basically a futuristic animated sitcom made by Hanna-Barbera in 1962-63.
Yep.
There was George, wife Jane, two kids' names who I can't remember.
Leroy was the boy.
That's good. I knew you'd come up with that.
I can't remember the girl.
Well, this is sexism, really. You know the boy because you didn't know
the
girl.
Well, you know why I know the girl, the boy. Yeah, that's right, because I heard Amanda. Amanda was in the back of the car singing the theme tune the other night, and she said to Leroy, I went, yeah, Leroy.
Shame she's not here to sing it now. Anyway, there's the dog Astro.
Yes.
And the maid Rosie.
Yes.
The robot maid.
The robot maid.
Who was always messing up.
With a big bosom.
Yeah. And Rudy, who was, which stood for Referential Universal Differential Indexer, who was George's work computer and his best friend.
Right.
Okay. And Rudy was also a founding member of the Society for Preventing Cruelty to Humans, which is very interesting.
Oh. Okay,
so we're getting there. Then there was Henry Orbit, the Jetsons' apartment manager, who was always in an excellent mood. Don't know what he was on. And in his spare time had built a robot called Mac, who had a crush on Rosie. Now, do you think a half-Syrian orphan boy growing up in California might have been watching that?
I wonder.
Yep.
A computer called Mac. Goodness me.
So, Sally, George's typical working week was 1 hour a day, 2 hours a week. Okay.
Right.
So this was in 1962, they're talking about this.
1 hour a day,
two days a week.
2 days a week, yeah.
Yeah. So he worked two hours.
Not that much. Yeah.
And how did he get to work? In an electric transportation pod.
Yes.
Okay, so next time you want to go to Sydney,
yeah.
What do you have an Uber membership?
I do.
You do, okay. So Uber wants you to take a taxi from your place to probably Arthur's Seat, where they're going to build a vertiport. And they're going to take these Uber elevated flying taxi, will fly wherever you like, basically, mostly to Tullamarine. They have they have recruited Dr. Mark Moore from NASA to make what will initially be a 2 to 4 seater electric pod with many rotors and a range of 80 to 160 kilometers.
You're kidding me. So Uber are actually doing this at the moment.
They're making it. They're making it now. Top speed is not mentioned, but if the Tesla electric car is any example, they'll be fast. And there'll be no more CityLink. No more Vic Roads, but I'm sure they've made Vic Air already. They've probably registered the name. So that's coming up with Uber.
That is super exciting. Yeah. I can't wait.
You'll be able to fly across the bay.
Yes.
So talking about abuse of power and Apple's market value last week was $700 billion.
Yep.
Okay. Google, no evil my ass, parent company Alphabet, $580 billion. And to put it in perspective, those paragons of virtue, Exxon Mobil and JP Morgan Chase, combined, are worth less than Apple.
Wow, isn't that a staggering?
It's insane. 75% of Apple's earnings are from your iPhones. 75% of $700 billion. It's a lot of money on iPhones. Chief executive Tim Cook, not heterosexual, arises at 4:30 every morning to do an hour of nasty gymnastics before sitting down to a bowl of cornflakes in his massive German kitchen.
He should know better than to eat cornflakes.
I know. All alone, I'm making it probably Burger Muesli, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
All alone on his phone, looking at the stock market app.
Yeah.
In 2014, Tim's salary was more than $1 million a day, every day. Tim recently said that tax legislation changes under Donald Trump would enable Apple to bring home cash from overseas, which amounts to a piddling $230 billion in a bank. So love your iPhones and your iPads. So Mark Zuckerberg, just to move on to the others, company started in 2004, not so long ago, now worth $62 billion. That's just Mark himself and counting. And everyone is giving him their data for free.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I just don't get that.
No. So, well, because it's people loving their iPhones so much. So to get to your question about what people will do, I want to go back to Paris in 1793.
Yeah, 3 years 1793,
after, 3 years after the revolution, guillotine singing in the Place Concorde. At the time, all the professional armies of the European monarchies were attacking France on all its borders and gaining ground. So the tribunal ordered the levée en masse, which is universal conscription. It's worth reading.
Is it?
It is. Mm. The young men shall fight. The married men shall forge arms and transport provisions. The women shall make tents and clothes and shall serve in hospitals and bordels. The children.
And bordellos. Oh, gee, great.
Don't tell Andrea or Anthea. And bordels. The children shall make lint into linen and pick up after themselves. The old men shall betake themselves to the public squares in order to arouse the courage of the warriors and preach hatred of kings and the unity of the republic. As we all know, they prevailed. It worked. And some. This was the end of absurd aristocratic officers with dashing mustaches and massive swords, and the beginning of people's armies, where merit counted more than accent, producing people like Napoleon, evolving into world wars, culminating in World War I and II.
Yeah.
Okay. At the same time in Paris, the tribunal produced the more famous document, the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, which recognized that all citizens have equal value and equal political rights, which brought about a common argument in defense of democracy, Plato, that giving people political rights is good because the soldiers and workers of democratic countries perform better than those of dictatorships. Okay. So granting people political rights increases their motivation and their initiative, which is useful both on the battlefield and in the factory. But now, in the 21st century, the majority of both men and women will lose their military and economic value. Even the guy taking his latte into an office in Tampa, Florida on a sunny morning, sitting down and blowing up people on the other side of the world with a drone while watching baseball or porn on another screen. Mm. He's gone. He'll be replaced by a robot or an algorithm.
Yeah.
We are now developing new types of non-conscious intelligence that can perform tasks such as playing chess, driving cars, diagnosing diseases far better than humans, for all these tasks are based on pattern recognition. That's something John should hear, listen to. And data collection, which they are raking in for free. This raises the question, which is more important, intelligence or consciousness? How much time do I have?
No, you haven't got any more time.
In the 21st century, this is an urgent political
issue. It's all right. No, we'll work it out.
And at least for armies and corporations, the answer is straightforward. Intelligence is mandatory, but consciousness is optional.
I know. What state are we going to find ourselves in?
Well, we'll have lots of time to think about it.
Yeah.
So just to finish off, there's a famous biologist named an entire group of parasites after her ex-husband, Michael... Microphallus.
I like that.
Anyway, so John, I miss your laconic.
Yes.
Cynicism, your pacemaker cynicism.
So to distill all of that into a thought, what's happening to us as a human race?
With the algorithms and robots are taking over. They're not taking over. They're just going to be replacing all the jobs. Yep. There won't be any work. The lawyers, doctors. I think the only thing which is pretty safe are archaeologists because there'll
be plenty to dig up.
Yeah.
It looks like we'll be heading back to a more French kind of state, which is a philosophical one.
Hopefully.
Thank you, Mark. Our next guest is one of the curators of high-risk dressing, critical fashion that's on at RMIT Design Hub. The exhibition's an inquiry into the still resonating impact of the Fashion Design Council, a group formed in Melbourne in the early 80s, established to provoke and promote the avant-garde in Australian fashion. Founded by Kate Durham, Robert Pearce and Robert Buckingham, the group's influence continues to have relevance today. Kate Rhodes, the curator of this exhibition, is in here to talk to us this morning. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Kate, tell me, what is high-risk dressing?
It's a good question, Sally. It's a term that comes straight out of the Fashion Design Council newsletter, which is full of these fantastic turns of phrase, and it forms half of really... two parts of a show. It's one exhibition, but really has two key streams in it, if you like. And the high-risk dressing part refers to the work coming out of the Fashion Design Council. And the Fashion Design Council, as you said, existed from 1983 to 1993. And we're very lucky here at RMIT to be co-located with the RMIT Design Archive. And we have the archive of the Fashion Design Council here at the university. And we're using that as the basis for the show. And the idea of high-risk dressing is really just that. It's about this mode of style, this mode of of dressing ourselves to really take on the world. And Kate and Robert, that you mentioned, really had the fire in the belly at the time about that the youth of the day could change the world, and they could start by doing that through the way that they dressed. They wanted to see the fashion landscape in Melbourne and really in Australia change. They were sick of a kind of bland approach to dressing, to not putting your hands up to say that, yes, the way that we dress forms a window onto the world, in the way that we want to project our personalities, project our politics and our way of thinking. And so Harvey Fisson takes on all of that. And then the other side of the title, the critical fashion, is looking at contemporary fashion, the fashion that's being produced today. And what's really interesting about that is that it's coming out of the academy that we find. It's a fashion that's not so much about product as it is more about ideas. And many of the fashion practitioners in the show have PhDs or masters, and they're producing the kind of fashion that fits more comfortably in a way in the gallery, but more so than on the street. It's often not about clothes, but about a performance or about a presentation or about music.
Absolutely. I have to say I was involved and went to some of those Fashion Design Council shows in the early 80s. In fact, I worked with Roger Foley, LSD Fogg, and we staged, I'm not sure if it was the first one, but it was the one at St. Moritz. And it was shocking, it was exciting, and you know, there were pieces of things up on the catwalk that no one could ever possibly wear, but I still, you know, they're still etched in my memory. It was very provocative. It was exciting. What is it about that FDC time that has become, that still is resonating? I mean, it's still inspiring to young fashion makers, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's really about how to make a creative life for yourself, not working for someone else, working for yourself, having your own name above the door of your business. And this is really the driving force of the FDC. It was about helping those people make little businesses. And that's still true today, I think. It's still about being in control of your own creative production, being in control of the messages that your work is about, and really being accountable to yourself as a maker. And so that legacy really does continue on in the show. And it's interesting to see how the spaces of making and presentation and production and socialising that goes along with running a creative practice has changed over time too. And that's also something that we're looking at in the show.
Can you explain, because there's an architectural involvement in the mix, which is also interesting because there were young architects, Crowd Magazine, that were also very instrumental in those first shows. And you're incorporating architecture too in this exhibition,
yes,
aren't you?
Yes, and there's a lot of numbers in this show. You mentioned that I'm the curator of the show. I'm one of four curators along with Nella Melios and Fleur Watson and Robin Healy. There's 11 contemporary fashion designers, all of this work from the Fashion Design Council, and then three architects, as you say, as well as a graphic designer. So the three architects we tapped on the shoulder and commissioned to create three spaces for us that really leapt out of sites that were important to the Fashion Design Council. So the office, the bar and the shop were three sites that we see as being important for the making, presentation, production and sort of social life of the members of the Fashion Design Council. And we're using these as three sites to sort of test how the legacy lives on today. And so the three architects who we've involved are Wo Wo Wah, Matthew Bird from Studio Bird, and Sibling Architecture. We commissioned them to create these three sites, so a new shop of today, a bar, and an office. And we've set up this scenography in the very grand, very high ceiling spaces here that we have at Design Hub as the sort of set in which to locate the work from the 11 fashion designers who are in the show, and they are absolutely incredible. On opening night, we had fashion designers rapping, we had bands playing, and all of the work on display for everyone to see.
Amazing. So what happens when, if somebody's coming along to visit it, because I think it runs through until mid-March or 18th of March, doesn't it?
That's right. And we're actually going to extend the show, but we won't announce those dates yet. But yes, come in the next month, and every day that you come in, you'll be able to see the work of these 11 fashion designers, whether it be them in residence, performing in a fashion parade. They've got spoken word work. There are videos. And each day we're going to be live cataloguing the Fashion Design Council collection that I mentioned that we have here as part of our archive. There'll be talks, panel discussions, so a lot going on and a lot for visitors to see and really get their teeth into in this show.
It sounds like a fantastic initiative. That is wonderful. High-risk dressing, critical fashion is on at the RMIT Design Hub. We've been talking to Kate Rhodes, one of the curators of this fabulous exhibition. It runs until the 18th of March. I suspect the best place to go is to the RMIT website. Would that be right, to have a look and see?
That's right. So that's designhub.rmit.edu.au.
Thank you so much for talking to us today, Kate Rhodes.
Thank you, Sally.
Bye.
Bye.
Up next, Island King, an Australasian adventure, episode 11, Australia Bound.
Island King, an Australasian adventure, starring Andrew Curry and Kate Jenkinson. Death in the Pacific, episode 11, Australia Bound. We left Will King in a room with a view in the inviting embrace of the lovely Gabrielle. Could this be the moment he loses all sense of propriety?
But love isn't everything, is it?
No. There's loyalty and gratitude and living day to day and a million and one other things to fill up married life. And a vow to honour and cherish.
But I'm so unhappy.
Yeah, well, happiness isn't everything either.
But you make me happy, Willie.
Really?
Ever since I first saw you.
I like you too, Gabby. A lot.
Give me a kiss, Willie.
Oh, crikey.
Willie?
Mm-hmm?
I think we should not waste a lovely hotel room on a hot Tahiti afternoon.
Righto.
What?
No, it's just not right.
Ach, du lieber.
Ralph's a good friend.
I don't love him, Willie, and I'm going to leave him. Besides, he might have killed Vinky.
Nevertheless, until we find him and sort this out, we've got to keep things uncomplicated.
Okie dokie. But you're going to take me to Loa La Bouche for dinner.
Deal.
Oh, Willie, why couldn't you have been French?
Madame et Monsieur, dernière annonce. Air France, le vol 334 vers Noumea.
That's the last announcement. Now remember, we're in a hurry.
We are in a hurry.
Yeah, that's the idea. They won't be that keen on a long, hard look. Oh, crikey, the customs chap is packing up.
Oh, scheisse.
Exactly. Remember to shuts in your gob.
And you are a toffee English Vinky.
Yeah, right. Pardon, monsieur. We're booked on 334.
They announced the flights at the hotel, monsieur.
Yes, I know.
Darling.
I'm sorry.
Passport.
Thanks, old chap.
Darling.
Yes, darling. What is it? Oh, look, my friend. They seem to have all boarded. Do you think you could let them know we're coming?
I don't work for the airline, monsieur.
Yes, I know. But...
Madame et monsieur, appel final. Air France, le vol 334 vers Noumea.
How long will you be away, monsieur?
Look, matey, we don't really have time for that. Could you please ask them to hold the flight?
How long will you be away, monsieur?
They are taking the stairs away.
Right, now listen here.
Old chap, I saw the most charming dress shop on Rue Gauguin. Mimi's, do you know it?
Of course, madame.
Does your wife know it too?
Oui, madame. Merci, madame.
Philippe, tenez le vol!
Is that all they have? Tea?
Well, you are English. I'm just glad we got through customs in Sydney. We can walk straight out of Melbourne. You reckon Ralph's still in Portsea?
That is where the telegrams come from. Ay, my head is spinning. 4 days, stop here, stop there. I need a big bath and a big snooze. And a big hug.
I'm a Coogee boy. I think Portsea's south.
I wasn't so impressed with Sydney. Bit behind the times.
Have you looked out the window lately?
My God! Have we gone to the outback?
Welcome to Melbourne, love.
Where is everybody?
We are everybody.
Look, there are cows over there. This must be a country airport.
No, Essendon Aerodrome, 4.5 miles from the city of Melbourne.
And Ralph wants me to live here?
I don't know, there's something to be said for the wide brown land, as the poet Dorothy McKellar would say.
Oh, poetry, Billy. I find that exciting in a man.
Really? if I should die, think only this of me.
Ooh.
Well, maybe some romantic stuff. Shakespeare? Goethe?
Romantic,
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
Oh, go right ahead. Ugh, stinking hot.
Somebody had better know where Portsea is.
Oh, right around the bay, mate. About 65 mile.
Really? Jeez, is there a train, a ferry?
A train, about half the way. It'll get you to Mornington.
That's no good.
Let's get a bath and worry about this later.
How else could we get to Portsea?
Taxi, mate.
Crikey, that'd cost a pretty penny, you think?
Only one way to find out, mate. Frank Porter, Porter Limousines.
Our callow couple may have scored a ride straight through to Portsea and to Ralph. And while the fare might be steep, what price shall we put on the truth? Be sure to tune into the next exciting episode of Island King! Island King is written by Peter Swan and starred Andrew Curry, Kate Jenkinson, Doug Tremlett and Nick Farnell, with Sally Bellew and Peter Swan in supporting roles. Sound production by Steve Myers. Tune in each day to Drive at 5:05 for the next exciting episode!
Time now for View from a Cliff with blogger, writer, actor, and statesman of the show, Cliff Ellen. Good morning, Cliff.
Good morning, Sally and Mark.
Good morning, Cliff.
Mark's been talking about manipulation. that's better than Island King. Island King is so dramatic.
You're so mean.
Who wrote it?
Swanee. Swanee wrote it, of course.
Look, retire, really.
We love it.
Either that or bring me in on the writing and I'll put a bit of sex in it or something.
There was a bit of sex in last week's, if you don't mind.
Well, I missed last week.
Well, it started with kissing, then it just ended. So we assume there was a bit of, you know, Mark, how's your father?
Mark's adding a bit of class to this hour each week.
He is, isn't he?
You talked about the concept of failure there at one stage.
I haven't actually gone into that. It was the beginning of a subject, which I'll probably go into next week. And I'm also be talking about the narrating self and the experiencing self, which will be interesting for you, Cliff.
It will be, because I can make notes. So, yeah. And I'll whip them into my column.
Exactly.
That'll be good.
Yes. Well, I was talking about the women's football and I was starting to rubbish it and my son said something really intelligent, because he's a psychiatrist and talking about my bias against women by nature. But I spoke on my phone and I copied that and I put it in the blog.
Yes.
And it sounded really good. It sounded like I was really fair and, you know, you've got to pinch these things.
Yeah, it's true. I went along to that football game on the weekend, you know, the Melbourne Footscray women's game.
Yeah.
At the Witten Oval. It was great.
Well, if you like the standard, you could see a similar standard down at Rye, the under 10. They're about the same.
So, really?
Yeah.
Is that supposed to be insulting?
No, I'm just saying.
It doesn't mean that Rye's really, really, really good.
Cliff, there's a place for you on March the 4th to the 8th, a woman's place, and they're celebrating women living in the Mornington Peninsula. I think it'd do you a lot of good to go there. Pick up also.
Didn't they have the Seven Sisters Festival or something at Mount Martha?
Oh, I don't know. Did they?
Well, they did. Yeah, it was some weekend at Bay Park or something. 2,000 women, 80 workshops, 60 markets, and more interestingly, 100 healers and psychics.
Ooh. Now,
I don't know if they've had it or if it's coming up, but I'd love to have a talk to them.
I'd love to see you in a room full of healers and psychics.
I love psychiatrists and, you know, psychologists and all those people.
Do you?
Well, I get a lecture from my son every second week.
Right, so you'd be able to converse quite well.
Well, they do, yes. One week he and my daughter go to one of these places where they have little bars and they're dark. sort of thing.
Sauna?
Wine lounges.
Oh.
Yeah. I never go to those. I wait until they come to the RSL. Anyway, picnic at Hanging Rock.
Yes.
With Karen.
With friend of the show, Karen Isn't Fairfax. Great? That's yes. exactly right, yes.
Not that she's shy on advertising on Facebook. No. But by the same token, it's nice.
So who wrote Picnic at Hanging Rock?
No, I don't know.
It was, but I do. Russell I do. Drysdale's wife, wasn't it? Joy?
I know
Norman Lindsay's auntie. I think it was one of Lindsay's painters. It was their wife.
We'll have to look that up, actually. Yeah.
Well, yeah, production sure. hasn't started yet. It comes
but it's
on
got a pretty
showcase.
Star-studded cast, hasn't it?
Well, John Flass, not
John. Well, okay, but it's got Hugo Weaving
Surely
in it,
I'd
hasn't
be better
it?
Than John Flass.
And Colin Friels, isn't that a big...
It's got a good cast. Yeah. I didn't list the cast. You're not interested in that. ABC drama at last, an ABC drama. Yeah. Newton's Law, have you seen that?
No, I haven't. That's the Claudia Calvane one, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, she's fantastic.
Yes, she is, terrific.
Most of the rest of the people are very ordinary.
Oh, that's disappointing.
That's another thing. I had an argument with... Oh, my son's in this a lot today. I had an argument with him. I said, no, I saw it. I said, I didn't like it. I said, I fast-forwarded. I said, it's obviously written by a woman. Of course, he attacked me again. I said, well, I just get the feeling. I get the sense. And anyway, I looked it up, of course. It was written by a woman and directed by a woman. Now, this is not being, heavy. This is just my sense of dialogue, that's all.
Yeah, so you can just recognise that it's, of course, they would be different.
Yeah.
A woman's writing and a man's writing.
Some of my friends are in it, and I'm glad to see more get work. But it wasn't my cup of tea. I've watched a couple of episodes. That's about all.
Yeah, okay. I think that's all that's up at the moment, isn't it? Or maybe there's the three of them.
There's also something about the Mornington Peninsula placemaking grants.
Ooh.
Grants.
Ooh.
That closes March the 29th. For local groups with ideas and inspiration. You know, like it's, tell Billy Shorten to get a bit inspiration.
Mm-hmm. That's on the Mornington Peninsula.
Yeah, but it's progress... Projects that address the community, obviously, up to about $5,000.
So. Is that a council grant that they're running?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds good. $5,000. You'd want to get up something interesting for that, surely.
You'd hope to be able to do that. Yes.
Films. Mm-hmm. Fred Skepsis' first feature film since 2013. Three teams with Clive Owen and Guy Pearce.
Yeah, what's it called?
I'm not sure. Andorra.
Yep.
Yes. And there's another one with Gillian Anderson, Tony Collette. I'm not sure what that's called either. Look, I'm all over the place today.
You are. Yes, you are a bit. I did see something with Tony Collette in it just recently. It must have been a short on, was it on SBS that I was watching?
Oh,
so
sure.
I realised she was in a new film.
Now, last week on Channel 1, I've never watched Channel 1.
I don't know what Channel 1 is.
Because I watch everything through Foxtel, and Once Upon a Time in America was on, which is one of the greatest films of all time. I've tried to tell people this, but they all say it's too boring or too slow. It's just a magnificent film.
Is it from what era?
Up there with Casablanca.
Oh, okay.
Up there with Leon the Professional.
Really?
And if John was here, he'd say another film.
One Gorky Park, wouldn't he? Yes.
Once Upon a Time in America is just, I love it. It's an opera.
Really?
It's beautiful. The music is stunning. Everything about it.
Is it a 50s or 60s thing?
1984.
Oh, it's much more recent.
And it would
than
run
that.
For
okay.
about 3 hours. Yeah. Mm. So you've got to sit back. Sergio Leone directed it, and a little Italian fella.
Oh, yeah. He always had good music.
Just to talk about television, you know that the ratings are going down at enormous rates because people between 16 and 39 are no longer watching television at all. They're all on their screens, on their telephones, or their or their tablets. And so they're really concerned, all the big television stations, about what the future is going to hold.
Yeah, they have to change their model, absolutely.
Well, apparently Facebook's going to become a television and video. That's what the next step is for Facebook.
It's very, when I'm on Facebook, there's so many little movie things on there anyway.
That's
it. I could spend 3 or 4 hours if I wanted to, but I don't.
No, well, that's what's going to happen.
Well, I have to say, we don't watch television. Very, very rarely do we watch television.
I don't have a television, so I can't, but it's a... It's a wonderful. I think Australian television, with all the advertisements, is just insane.
It's insufferable.
That's right.
Whereas in France, they have all the advertisements at the end of the shows. So you've got a whole. You're obliged to sit there and watch it right through. There's not, you know, these advertisements every 3 or 4 minutes. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it just breaks it.
In Greece, they'll show a big block and then they'll have a half an hour of advertisements halfway through the show. Yes.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
But look, it's all about making money. Now, look, Berlin Syndrome.
Yes.
Already selected to debut at Sundance, along with Red Dog, True Blue, and Killing Ground. Now, Killing Ground comes from director Kate Shortland. And we all know how good she is. I'll give you a big rap, Kate, just in case people think I'm anti-feminist. Breath, based on the novel of the same name by
Tim Winton.
Winton. And that includes Roxburgh and Richard Roxburgh. And who's that girl, Debicki?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know who's that.
And
that'll be
Hotel
great.
Mumbai. Are you shortening now or keep going?
No. We've got to cut you off.
A fictionalised account of Hotel Mumbai.
Ah.
The 2008 bombings of the Taj Mahal Palace Hotel in India takes a leaf from the 2009 documentary Surviving Mumbai. I don't think it's my cup of tea, that sort of stuff.
No, okay.
Although,
well,
atmospheric. Yeah. Anything in India is atmospheric.
Cliff, how about the Book of Mormon? Are you going to see it?
No, but everybody says it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Red Dog are apparently doing something really good at the Bondi Pavilion right now, but I don't think I'll go up to Bondi.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we haven't got time for a song for you for this week, I'm sorry to say. So
I apologise to your listeners because I think I'm close to 81, so getting a bit slow.
Oh, look.
Or is it just me?
Hey, it is time for the news, though, so you're going to have to stay here with us while we do the news.
Well, I might talk to Mark afterwards. I'm really interested in that. You know, that business. What do you call it?
Manipulation.
Yes.
No. I like the concept of failure.
Oh, the concept of failure. We'll get there, definitely.
High-risk dressing, critical fashions on at RMIT Design Hub in the RMIT building until February the 18th of March. Fourth to the 8th of March is A Woman's Place, the festival celebrating women living on the Mornington Peninsula. We talked to Anthea about that today.
Moth is also presenting an event for International Women's Day on the 8th of...
it's on the 3rd. It's on the Friday, opening the women's...
This is a complete mess-up, huh? Go to Music on the Hill for details.
Yes, that's right. On at MPRG is Texter Queen, Between You and Me, which is a survey exhibition of the Texter Queen's work. That looks kind of interesting. I'm quite interested to go and have a look at that.
Oh, that's the girl who had the photo of herself with the kelp all over her head.
Oh.
Yes, I saw it. It was quite a lovely photo. She picked up and just draped it over her.
Oh, Texter Queen, was it? She sounds like quite an interesting woman. Submissions are open for Art Red Hill 2017, so go and have a look for them on Facebook, Art Red Hill, if you're interested in getting your work included in that. Now, if you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, but you can catch up with the show via podcast, which apparently is going to appear on the station website sometime soon. Shows repeating on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Join us again Sunday, 11 o'clock. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know what we like.
Yeah. Do you? What about you, Cliff?
I was just impressed the way you talk. You and Mark, you're so good.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, ladies.